Between the Covers, a series designed around who and what can be done and achieved by patients, planning and working in a community of like-minded, successful people. This podcast series is for anyone looking at becoming a successful published author and those looking to understand the mind of a writer and the goals of a publisher. Proudly sponsored by Shoreline Publishing. Welcome and enjoy.
G'day and welcome to the Between the Covers podcast, the Shoreline Publishing podcast. And on today's episode, you'll be hearing from a fellow named Michael Pert, who's written a book called Sandpiper. G'day, Michael. How are you?
Hello, Will. How are you going?
Not too bad, not too bad. And yeah, you must be pretty excited at the moment with Sandpiper out and about.
Yes, it's very exciting to finally see it in print and hold it in my hand. So very looking forward to people enjoying it.
What was the inspiration behind Sandpiper? I'm really keen to know.
Well, I have a research and professional interest in espionage, and the Second World War is a big topic and a favourite topic. So I thought I'd marry the two together and produce a spy thriller from that period.
How do you find the genre of historical fiction to write? I mean, there's all the research to get it historically correct, but there's also the fiction element you've got to work on as well.
Yeah, I find the marriage of the two really interesting, actually, because while you write, people think that fiction writers don't have the same burden of research that perhaps non-fiction writers do. But you have to get it right, and people write to you if you get the period pieces wrong and tell you where you went wrong. So you really have to get that part right. And then you overlay the thing that interests you, which is the plot, the characters, and whatever it is you've said about that group of people doing. So the marriage of the two I find really exciting.
It's a bit like science fiction, historical fiction, the fact that the smallest little blip will start a flurry of emails or a flurry of letters or people being very disgruntled very, very quickly, isn't it?
Well, it is, and it's interesting because although it's fiction and you could theoretically bat any criticism away saying, hang on, it's fiction, I can write whatever I like, people want, in historical fiction, they want to dive into that period. And particularly if they've lived during that period, they enjoy the book because it recreates memories for them. And if you get the clothing wrong or the music wrong or anything like that, they're right onto you to let you know that that wasn't a real adaptation of their lived experience. So you've got to try and make it right.
So you've got a professional and a recreational interest in World War II. Can you give me... It's slightly off topic, but a really unusual World War II fact that people might not really know.
That's interesting. All right, so the Sandpiper is actually about what's known in today's parlance as a sleeper agent, a German agent operating in Britain from before the war and during the war. But the reality is that the British security services were so efficient during the Second World War that at a certain time they were able to say there were no German agents operating in England because they'd either arrested them, turned them, and they were operating for the British side, or they'd executed them because they wouldn't cooperate. So I had to take that little situation and produce a situation where a spy could be operating in England under different circumstances. So I took the modern version of the sleeper agent, and I made him into a person who went into England many years before the war and was then unknown to the British security services, as he would have been unknown to them even if it had happened in real time.
That's incredible. How did you find the insertion of a fictional character into that setting of World War II? Because it's so well documented and well researched and well covered, you've really worked out to try and insert something into that, haven't you?
Yep, you've hit the nail on the head. And publishers are really hard as well, because it can easily be said that World War II has been done to death. I get that, and you have to produce something new. And I worked to produce this book, and it has three things in it that no other fictional espionage tale of World War II that's ever been printed has in it. The three things are, firstly, the sleeper agent angle has never been done before. Secondly, I've used the technology of the time mainly codes and secret writing for the people to tell the story and for it all to happen. And I've done that in as ungeeky a way as I could, so that people are not, their eyes are not rolling back, but it's interesting enough for people to read and understand a bit of the history of how that works. But also, I've done something that's not impossible, or it certainly is plausible. The agent Sandpiper is actually recruited for the first time in World War One, 20 years before this tale takes place. He goes home to England thinking that his betrayal at that time is all but forgotten, but of course the Germans haven't forgotten, and they turn up on the eve of World War II wanting to extract a little bit more out of him, and he then has a new lease of life. So those three aspects have never been, to my knowledge, combined in a fictional tale about espionage in World War II before. So I had to fight that done-to-death thing and find something new, because this is the book I really wanted to write, and so I had to find something new to put in it.
And that word you use there, betrayal, I found that fascinating when I was reading and doing my research on the book ready to do this podcast. Betrayal that lasts 22 years, that's a long secret to keep, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's not uncommon in the real world. It's one of those things that if you find yourself in the situation that poor old Sandpiper did, you have a vested interest in no one learning about it, and you will go to even greater lengths to continue to cover it up, as he does in the book, and he pays the price for that, of course.
There's two other words that are used to describe the book. One of the words used is formidable when talking about the character Yvette, and the other word is treachery. And I reckon those two words show a real balance of strength and weakness at the same time. Is that something you tried to do?
Yeah, absolutely, because most wonderful historical characters, whether they're real or fictional, they have to have that balance of the two, I think, to be reasonable and plausible to the reader. Now, Yvette, it clearly fits the mould of what was known during World War II as the amateur spy. Now, these were women who usually had a French background, spoke French fluently, were keen on helping out the free their homeland, et cetera, et cetera. And people will know the names of people like Odette Churchill, Violette Szabo, and that type of person. Now, obviously, Yvette is styled around the same type of person, and they were formidable people. I mean, some of these women had achieved everything they did, which stands by itself today, but they were dead by the age of 25. They lived a life up to 25 that, you know, most of us will never see, and they were formidable people. And Yvette is my favourite character in the book because I wanted her as a tribute to those women who worked in the Special Operations Executive.
So those people that work in the Special Operations Executive and Yvette's character herself, how dissimilar or similar? A lot of people have heard the term the French Resistance or that sort of thing. Is he really a French Resistance character?
No, not a French Resistance character per se, but the Special Operations Executive worked hand in glove with the Resistance to achieve what they were trying to achieve in occupied France. So the networks were connected. They needed help from the Resistance. And I bring that out in the book as well. There's a significant period when Yvette and her partner in an operational sense, but also her lover, escaped from capture by the Germans, and the Resistance assists them to get back to England. And those types of things could never have happened without the connection and the cooperation between both parties.
I'd like to touch back on that conversation we had a second ago regarding the separating the 1916 through to 1938 and that not being done before. I reckon it's a fantastic little you could have almost written a prequel, but you've gone with this angle instead. Was it a conscious thought?
Yeah, it was. I think these days, and it's so hard to get people to read books that are connected, you really got to try and think and have them as standalone. So I wanted to have it all in the one book so that people followed the story right through from the start. But you're right, it could easily have worked as a – there could have been a whole story just in that World War One episode, and then we could have reintroduced Sandpiper in another book. That's true. Perhaps if they do a Netflix series, they might do that.
Well, we can only hope they do a Netflix series. I was going to say, that was my next question, actually. You preempted me. What is your hope or ambition for the story?
Well, I just wanted to, I wanted to write it and enjoyed writing it. I want people to read it and enjoy reading it. I've made mention that success comes in many forms. If my friends, family and people read it and they have good feedback about it, that's successful to me.
Yep.
If it does well in literary competitions, that's successful. If it sits on the shelf and a publisher takes an active interest in it and takes a risk to say it's good enough to sit on the shelf, that's success. But, of course, writers are a bit like actors, I think. 99% of writers are not making money 99% of the time. And to sell a book these days is difficult in the market. But definitely I would love to see those characters on screen, no doubt about it.
Wouldn't it be marvellous? I can see it now. Like it sort of, to me, this story has the sort of intrigue. There was a show called The Night Manager a little while ago around, I don't know if you saw that, around arms dealers and legal arms dealers in Europe. And this sort of, this appealed to me in that way, as it's just got that level of intrigue that would just suck you into an 8-part series.
Well, that is a very fine compliment without realising it, because John le Carré is one of my favourite authors. He wrote The Night Manager, of course.
Magic.
Yeah, and that's a fine compliment, and to be even mentioned in the same sentence is pretty heartening.
Oh, not a problem at all. It just like that sprung to mind when I was researching and ready for this episode. Michael, thank you so much for your time. It's been wonderful to have a chat, and I wish you all the very best for the success of this book, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
Thanks very much, Will.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Between the Covers, produced by Shoreline Publishing.